There's a creek in this room. I don't mean a stream. Is a creek a stream? I think it is. I only know about creeks from the show I Shouldn't Be Alive. Some fella fell into a creek. He got his legs stuck under a huge boulder up in the mountains in some creek somewhere. The other fella had to go off and get help, and they were worried that the creek would fill up with rainwater. So I presume a creek is some sort of a stream that's not always full of water. It dries up sometimes. Is it like that thing on Terminator 2? Well, I suppose that's more of an artificial creek. On the movie Terminator 2, Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, who isn't really a character, he's not a real person at all. Arnold Schwarzenegger is playing a prop. He's playing part of the scenery. He's an inanimate computer that's being made to imitate people. So he's not acting in it at all. It's even less significant than being an extra in a movie. He was playing a computer. Like if I played a Hoover in an episode of Dallas, no one would say, oh, look, there's someone playing a vacuum cleaner. I wonder who he is. People who like to be extras. Is there another level down where you can play props instead of the company having to have paid promotions? If you want a robot or a computer on your TV show, a lot of the time you'll get a thing that has a big Apple symbol on it, and that'll be a paid promotion. Someone will sponsor it. Your man in Criminal Minds is sitting at his desk planning a murder, and you can see the huge, illuminated Apple logo on the back of his computer, and people go, he's got an Apple computer, I think I'll get one of them. It's like that. So Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator 2, he played a machine. He wasn't playing a character. He wasn't even an extra. He was playing a machine. Now, admittedly, he expanded the role and it became a big deal. He made the most of it. He ended up being president of California. Anyway, the creek in Terminator 2, there's Arnold Schwarzenegger's non-character, who's a machine, and the kid who's going to grow up to run World War III against the robots or something. They're on a motorbike being pursued, something like that. And they're going along what I might call a creek. Maybe it's not. It's some sort of a drainage thing. Like an empty canal along by a road. They're driving along like it's some sort of weird cycle lane. And that's some sort of a creek, isn't it? An artificial creek. It's like the way a canal is a river. We all know a canal isn't really a river. And an artificial creek is not really a creek. But that's a bit like what a creek is. Say I was a teacher in the inner city where the kids have never seen a zebra except in the zoo. And you bring them out to see farm animals and they're all going, oh, I've never seen a cow. I didn't know they grew them. I thought they were made in a factory and a conveyor belt. You'd have to do the same thing for creeks and rivers. No child who grows up in the inner city has ever seen a river. All they've seen is canals. Living in inner city Dublin, you do have the River Liffey going right through the middle. But say if you live more than half a mile from the city centre, there's a canal that goes across the top of the city, and there's a canal that goes across the bottom of the city. There's a good chance the first few years of your life, before you're allowed to go into town on your own, the only river you've seen is either the Grand Canal or the Royal Canal. Those canals also run out of Dublin and down the country. One of those canals flows through Athy. I used to live nearer to the canal in Athy than to the river. So I suppose there's that. If I went out of my house in those days and said, I want to go and see a natural waterway, I'd make my way down to the river, which admittedly wasn't very far. It's about 20 minutes walk. About 7 minutes before I get to the river, I cross the canal. And that would distract me. I'll say, oh, I don't need to go to the river. I have a canal right here, almost within my neighbourhood. Anyway, if you're a kid living in the city, there's a good chance that you've never seen a natural creek. You've never seen a cow. You've never seen a zebra, except in the zoo. Well, I suppose that's a real zebra. So at least you get to see a real zebra. But you don't see a real creek. You see a creek that may well be part of the sewage system indirectly somehow. I lived in a place called Bray when I was a teenager. I lived near the beach and there was some sort of outflow pipe that went onto the beach. It came out from underground and came onto the beach. A big opening of a pipe. You could go and play in that. And I thought that was part of the sewers system. There was a sewage processing plant built on the outskirts of Bray a few years later. A big white corrugated iron looking thing. It kind of looked like one of those historic Martello towers, except it doesn't look like that at all. A similar shape was made of ugliness. And it had an outflow of some sort, I presume it was just emergency overflow. For years you'd pass it on the train and there was a brown stain underneath the outflow. Now whether they did that on purpose or was some sort of marketing gimmick, they go, oh look, here's your town's brand new sophisticated sewage system. You don't have a sign on it because the residents don't like it. It affects property prices. But we have a stain on this pipe, probably only visible from the railway side, so that's helpful, because this place was built between the railway line and a small housing development. So at least the residents didn't have to see the stain. They saw the big ugly looking building, but they didn't see the stain, so that was good. But I saw the stain. On my way to school, I'd pass that and see it from the train and say, oh look, there's a stain, that's disgusting. I passed that now and it's significantly more blurry, so I don't know if there's still a stain, but if there is, I don't have to see it, so that's good. If you're listening to this on a walking school bus, I'd like you to try the following experiment, please. If you don't mind, and if duties permit, don't let me distract you from your driving. If you're in charge of a walking school bus, you're probably a parent, are you? You probably are. You're probably a parent. For the uninitiated, a walking school bus just means joining the line of kids who are walking to school. I hope one of the more imaginative kids will at least go, beep, beep. Please stand back. Luggage doors operating. Although that's only for long distance coaches. If you're going from somewhere like where I live in Wicklow to Dublin, a 90 minute drive to coach rather than a city bus. You hear an automated voice going, please stand back. Luggage doors operating. Because they're afraid the luggage door will hit you over the head and kill you. Which I suppose is a risk. I suppose if you have a walking bus, that wouldn't be realistic. Because those buses, as I say, they're for longer distance. They're going from the very, 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 very outer, greater Dublin area into the city. So you wouldn't be doing that. And you wouldn't be bringing luggage on like that anyway, going to school. Nothing wrong with the child having a bit of imagination. Why not encourage them? Maybe have themed days. You can say on Thursdays we do a long distance coach style. Wednesdays, we pretend we're on a car ferry. I suppose you have to bear in mind that this is probably being run by a volunteer parent. You can't expect them to do drama lessons on top of everything else. They're not teachers, and they're not even at school yet. You don't expect adults to work during their commute, so we shouldn't expect children to learn during their commute either, or when they get home. When your child gets home from school, I hope you don't expect them to do something educational, for example, learn how to wipe their own arse. No, they've had a long day at school. Don't burden them with further learning. Let them relax and watch shit on the television. If you've been told that they have homework, then by all means do the homework, but send some schoolwork back in with them to make a point. If you're unhappy with your teacher giving you too much homework, just send in a bowl of potatoes to be peeled in school, perhaps. I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking a child can't be peeling potatoes. That's dangerous. That involves a sharp blade. It's even more dangerous at home. There's no teacher there to supervise. You want your child just going around peeling potatoes all over the house as if it's just, no, that's not it. Your child shouldn't be learning anything at home because you are not qualified to teach a child. Your house isn't in institution of, well, unless you're homeschooling them, of course. In which case, I stand corrected. You probably know more about teaching than I do. That's perfectly fine. You're the expert. You're probably homeschooled yourself, are you? You probably were. Or else you think you were. One of those old-fashioned schools, like they had on Little House on the Prairie, where it was always called a schoolhouse. And you think that counts as being homeschooled. Well, it doesn't. It's a schoolhouse. It's not a real house. It's a schoolhouse. It's a little building that operates as a school. It's not a house at all. It's the schoolhouse, I know, but it's not a house. You go to the shithouse, and besides St. Stephen's Green, to the public shithouse, it's not there anymore. It's closed down. But if you went there, you wouldn't say that's a house. No, you wouldn't say, oh, I go to the public toilet in the shithouse beside Stephen's Green because I'd like to go home for my shit for lunchtime. You do not. For one thing, it was closed down years ago. Now, they did put a new temporary one up during COVID. They built a temporary wooden public toilet on the corner of St. Stephen's Green, just outside the shopping centre, to go for a piss any time after 10 a.m. I turned up there a few times at 9:30 a.m. They had staff there, and the fella seemed very surprised. He said, there's no pissing until 10 a.m. What in the name of Christ is wrong with you? About 10 years ago, they were digging up the whole city to build light rail lines, and you saw the remains of all these old underground public toilets being dug up and turned into power stations and things. It brought back memories for some of us. I'm on the news, they say, oh, did you know there's an ancient public toilet buried under this road that they're excavating now to build the Lewis light rail line? I go, yes, I did though. I've pissed there many times. It was only closed a few years ago. Am I that old that if I remember using that public toilet, I'm somehow from ancient times? I was born in the late 1970s. I'm not that old. I remember pissing in College Green in the underground toilet in the middle of the road. I say the middle of the road. There was a traffic island there and an underground toilet. There was another one in the middle of O'Connell Street. You could go in and have an underground piss there. That one was particularly creepy. You wouldn't want to go there. Well, of course, you wouldn't want to go any of these places, but it's either that or burst. Don't want to burst all over the place, because then you get done for litter. There was another one on the corner of O'Connell Bridge and the South Quays. Then they revived it in the 1990s or 2000s. There was a short and glorious era when they had a couple of self-cleaning toilets there. Someone would go in, use it, and they'd come out, and then the toilet would close for 3 hours. You'd stand there, you'd wait, and then the light would come on, it would become vacant again, and you go in and have your piss. There's no way to flush it. You go in, you just piss anywhere. The self-cleaning toilet, the idea was you just piss and shit anywhere. There was a toilet bowl, but there was no way to flush it, so I presume you were just supposed to pee wherever you felt like it. But after you left, the whole thing would just clean itself at a big long clean, like when you feed a cat and then it has a good 10 minutes of cleaning itself. It was fantastic. Of course, these toilets weren't sentient, so they wouldn't have got any satisfaction out of it. But that's okay, they also wouldn't have got any pain or misery out of it, because no one wants to be cleaning a public toilet every 20 minutes. No. If that toilet had been sentient, that would have been rather cruel. A human being, you wouldn't make them clean the toilet after every human visit. Although you shouldn't have to. Anyway, that's toilets for you. How did I start this? I can't remember now. I had a couple of false starts. I might have started this segment by going, if you're listening to this on a walking school bus. I don't think I did though. I think that was a failed segment. So what did I say? Did I say if you're listening to this in a public toilet? Surely I didn't. Did I? I'm not sure. When did I have to go back and check now? Or whatever way I started this. I probably strayed from whatever it is. Surely to Christ I didn't go, if you're listening to this in a public toilet, I'd like you to try the following experiment. Well, just in case I did, if you're listening to this in a public toilet, I'd like you to try the following experiment. Try leaving the toilet in the state in which you would expect to find it. Now, I know you expect to find it in an absolute disgusting mess, so let me rephrase that. Leave it in the state that you would expect in a reasonable society to find it. That's the problem, of course. That's a big deal if they're not in the way you want to find them when you arrive. I know what you do there. When you have an Amazon delivery now, sometimes they'll send you a little automated text message saying, I've left this outside And they'll say on this text message, they'll say this text window will close automatically within 5 minutes. So you have 5 minutes if you want to reply to this text. Sometimes they'll send you one saying, is anyone there? I want to leave this thing here. So if you're going into a public toilet, you enter your phone number. Now it's anonymized, but you enter your number, you do your ablutions, and you leave. And then there's a 5 minute window when the toilet can contact you by text to ask you, what in the name of Christ, come back and sort this out. So you have a 5 minute window. Now, of course, this is a reasonable society. So let's assume you have a reasonable society where the person, the next customer who goes in and uses the toilet, can be trusted to send you that text and do it respectfully but firmly, saying, hello, come back here. And because you've entered your number, you can be trusted with having the previous occupant's number, having access to it for 5 minutes. So you can recall the previous customer and have them come back and sort out their shit, so to speak. You can reply to this in the next 5 minutes, then the window closes. Of course, if they left the window open, that would help as well. Now, I know you hear Amazon and you think, no, I've heard bad things about them and toilets. I know, don't worry. I'm not going to take all of their ideas and put that into our public toilet system. It's just the thing about texting and the 5 minute window. I'm well aware people working in these Amazon warehouses that are the size of the moon, and when they take a toilet break, they have to walk 3 miles to get to the toilet, and it's docked from their lunch or it's docked from some system. I don't know what the exact details. Maybe it's figured out how many heartbeats you're going to have through your life, and they dock a number of heartbeats for every minute you spend getting to the toilet. Something along those lines. So no, don't worry, I'm not going to bring in all the Amazon employee practices, if there are any. And that's all allegedly, of course. This podcast is available on Amazon Music and on Audible, which is an Amazon thing. So if you're listening to this and you're a fan of either Amazon or Audible, don't worry. I'm quite willing to accept that you've had no problems in the line of toilet use during your dealings with them. You're probably thinking, I've bought stuff every week for the past decade, and not once has any of them ever brought me up on charges about my toilet breaks. And that's fine, I accept that. The toilet break thing is about their employees in some warehouse somewhere. And up until now, they didn't have any warehouses in this country. I think they're just opening their first one now. And this is a small island nation, something like 200 miles in width. Any warehouse that they set up in this country can't be more than a couple of 100 miles in width. In height, maybe 300 or 400 miles. That's not really the height, though. We all know that. You're looking at a map that's stuck to the wall, you think, oh, that's the height of Ireland. It goes from there to there, it's vertical. Then across the way, no. There's Northern Ireland as well, which is technically a separate market. Northern Ireland is outside of the European Union now, and there's all sorts of complications. So if they had a warehouse the full length of this island, it'd probably go, wait a minute, how do we do that? All I'm saying is there are natural geographic limits on how far away the toilet can be from where the worker is positioned in the warehouse. That'll help them somewhat. Imagine if you're working in a fucking Amazon place in the United States. It's 3,000 miles across from west to east. No, I see why they complain about that. Once upon a time, there was a dog. 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 Basically a dog. And this dog is walking along one day. Well, walking through a field. Can you call that along? Suppose if you're going parallel to one side of the field, you're following some sort of path, I suppose. Walking along a field. It could have been a very narrow field, in which case you could easily walk along it like it's a road. But in this case it wasn't. Maybe he was following a row of plants. Fields, if they're planted, everything's arranged in rows. So no, I take that back. It'd be quite easy to walk along a field. Quite easy indeed. Anyway, the dog was walking along the field. He wasn't in the field at all. He was on a railway line that happened to run alongside the field. This railway line was at one point part of the field. It was subject to a compulsory purchase order, so they bought a strip of the field and turned it into a railway line. And this dog, he's no idea it's no longer part of the field. He thinks, what in the name of Christ did they do to this field? His farmer, he's put a couple of metal things along it, a load of stones with oil dripping all over them for some reason. These two parallel tracks going along here. Like something you'd see in a movie. There was that movie about those five kids walking along a railway line. Now, I get confused. Is that the same one that has the man out of Star Trek, Wesley Crusher? Is that the one where they're going along the railway line, or is that a different one? The one where they end up pushing hot dog cart operator down the stairs into a subway. Could that be the same film? Because it was kids. Why would they be walking along a railway out the country? Would they not be walking along the subway tracks to get there? Maybe it was later on in the film. You can progress from one part of the country to another during the course of a long film. And The Walking Dead, they started off in the middle of a city, on the roof of a building in the middle of a city, and then they ended up the mountains somewhere. They ended up out country. Some of them ended up the other side of the country. Some of them in a spin-off ended up in a yacht. A yacht. How do you say it? Do you say yacht? That type of boat that starts with Hawaii and ends in T. I know how to say it. I'm just not able to. A yacht. A yacht. It's a yacht. Some of those letters are silent, but I don't know which ones. Which ones of those letters are silent? A yacht. Surely it can't be yacht. Can't be yuck, surely. The more I say it, the more stupid it sounds. Suffice to say, the first spin-off of The Walking Dead, about half of that season at least, they spent on one of those private boats going from California or somewhere down to Mexico or somewhere. So yes, they got around a bit during The Walking Dead. But that wasn't a movie. That was a couple of hundred hours of television, much of it unwatchable from the last few years. So no, that film where the kids were walking along the railway line, surely they didn't start down the middle of nowhere, go along some railway line and end up in the middle of a city on the subway. They were out on the street. They weren't on the subway line. They were out on the street. The hot dog vendor was on the street too. He wasn't in the subway station. So they hadn't come along the tracks. In fact, they were moving towards the tracks, really. They pushed this fella down. I don't know. Did they arrive along an intercity railway and then come up and walk around the streets a bit and they say, oh, look, there's a subway. Why didn't we come up to the subway? Does that not connect to the intercity rail system? Maybe we should have checked before we came up. I suppose we get off the mainline train. Unless you know that there's a subway station under that, you're not going to look. You're just going to go straight out onto the street and walk wherever it takes you. You're probably not very familiar with the city. I suppose there's that. Or maybe I am getting two films confused entirely. I don't know. Is there one called Stand By Me? And there's one that has Robert De Niro as a priest trying to defend the kid who pushed a hot dog vendor down the stairs into the subway or something. I don't know. Anyway, as I was about to say, I had said it in fairness. In fact, I've said it three times now. I went, there's a creek in this room. I've intentionally said it a few times because I've noticed lately my K's are getting a bit much. You don't hear them because I deal with them before you get to hear them. So when I said there's a creak in this room, I say it several times because I don't want the first sentence of a segment to be me going. Suffice to say, in that silence, there is a thing that you don't need to hear. You wouldn't want to hear. I don't say you don't want to hear because you've no idea whether you want to hear. I've decided for you. It's like when a waiter decides, I'm not going to put salt out. They don't want that. I suppose it's not really like that, is it? On sitcoms and things, they say, oh, here's your fancy food that the chef has cooked. And someone will ask for salt in a hilarious episode of some sitcom that's been going on for years, the 800th episode. It's all about salt. Someone asks for salt and some chef comes out there and goes absolutely nuts. Definitely seen this in sitcoms at some point. At some point, some sitcom between the 80s and the present day had at least one episode, probably more. Maybe am I thinking of classic Sesame Street, back before they had Elmo and all that shit. Classic Sesame Street. It used to be a proper sketch show. They'd have this blue fella called Grover. He'd come out and he'd be a waiter. And he'd have a blue man with a bald patch. He looked like a man in his 50s. You're probably supposed to think, that could be my dad. And it could have been my dad. My dad was in his 50s and he had a bald patch. And he looked a bit like that. He was taller than him. The blue fella who's in all these sketches in Sesame Street. He'd be in restaurants and he'd order some soup. Grover would be the waiter. And you say, waiter, there's a fly in my soup. And it'd be a big long thing about there being a fly in my soup. To teach kids how to spell fly. Or maybe to teach them to watch out for flies in their food. Whatever it is they think they're doing. I know they have regional adaptations of Sesame Street in some third world country where it was very important for kids to check for flies. You're in some famine. It's 100 degrees out. You got some soup that a charity brought along. It doesn't look like much, but at least it's nutritious. Probably some chicken soup. You have to watch that for flies. They teach kids, swat the fly away. Or if it's in your soup, hold the waiter. Now, there's probably not going to be a waiter. You're in some famine country. The waiter is probably some hard-working volunteer just trying to save you from dying of hunger. So don't complain or anything. Watch out for flies. Hold on a minute. My cats eat flies. They see a fly. They automatically go, I have to catch that fly. Then they eat it. They're not starving. They have access to food. And they do that by instinct. So why isn't there a child's instinct in a famine country? I'm not sure if you should or not, but remember they had that thing. It wasn't kids in the famine or anything. It was footballers and they crashed in the Andes. They were there a few weeks. And eventually they agreed to allow each other to eat their own dead bodies. I say eat their own dead bodies. Each person would eat someone else's dead body. Now, if they did that to survive, and it's quite understandable, I would want to survive too. Your instinct is to want to survive. It's perfectly normal. So why wouldn't a kid in a famine country? I suppose you need the fly to be healthy. So maybe their instincts are good that if there's a fly in the soup, that may be an unhealthy, diseased fly. The cat catches the fly and eats it because that's a healthy fly. It's the middle of winter here. It's the depths of winter. The middle of the hellhole of winter where everything's dead. And my cats are still catching stuff from the bedside light at night. Any insect that's still flying around at this kind of the year is probably super healthy. It's probably the Arnold Schwarzenegger of the fly world. So it's a good instinct to eat that. If that was floating in your soup, it wouldn't be a good instinct to eat that because that fly has died of something. Although, if it was floating in your soup at this time of year, that means that fly has managed to survive until well into winter. Just a decomposition thing, there's that, I suppose. So no, I take that back. I take that back. And of course, I think I just said the Arnold Schwarzenegger of flies. Arnold Schwarzenegger had a very serious heart condition about 20 years ago. So he's not all that healthy, in fairness. I believe he had a mitral valve replacement. He had that done. So that's not particularly healthy. My father had that and he died. He's not as healthy as people seem to think he is. He's about 90 now as well. So no, the fly is not the Arnold Schwarzenegger of the fly world. And if it is, you don't necessarily want to eat an artificial valve. That could be toxic. They're made of plastic or metal. I think you can get a pig's heart valve as well. You get and instead of getting an artificial one, they can give you a transplant from a pig. Maybe you had that. Eating just gets more and more complicated. I had a gas hob on our cooker until a few years ago. You light it on fire, basically. People go on about gas safety. They say, oh, gas, you have to be very careful with gas. Be very careful with gas, because if you have a gas leak anywhere, that could burn down a whole town. But then they also tell you, here's your gas hob cooker. You have this electric switch underwater beside it. You press that and it pumps pretty much just fight fire in the form of electricity. It pumps that into your gas cooker. You can even see it, it'll spark sometimes and it lights the gas. They're mixing fire and gas and they say, oh, this is great. Very good for you. They'll tell you if you get an electric hob instead, it's much cleaner because it's not. Maybe it is. I suppose it's cleaner than coal. When we were children, they tell you, coal is what they use to make soap. Horses are what they use to make glue. They just make up any old shit. Pure absolute drivel. Where was I even going with that? Oh yes, cooking. You have gas piped right into this open flame thing on our counter. And then we have an electrical wire connected to that. And you switch that. Oh, it's like detonating a bomb. You just want to control how much of a bomb you want. I want the bomb to be just powerful enough to boil this water. Then I want to turn it down again, make a slightly less powerful bomb so it just simmers. They never tell you what simmering means. And everybody's afraid to ask. I'd start by looking at instructions on things. Here's some chicken korma. You cook the chicken. I can do that fine. You cook it and then you look at it and you see that it's cooked right. And then you get some sauce. Pour on the sauce. And they say, bring it to the boil, and you do that. And then they say, and then simmer and enjoy. Now, what in the name of Christ is simmering? Is simmer mean you turn it down and leave it until something happens? Or you turn it down and leave it until you're ready to eat? Nobody knows what that means. And don't tell me you know what it means. You're part of the problem. You'll tell someone, when it's boiled, just turn it down and let it simmer. I never say, simmer for how long? Until what happens? What? And what is simmering? What level is simmering? That's another thing for you teachers. If you're in charge of a child and you're teaching them anything in the modern world, please tell them what the fuck simmering means. And tell them to go back and tell their parents what it means too. Because their parents, if they're anything like me, they've missed this bit of their education. What is simmering? I can only assume it's the cooking equivalent of the cymbals that a drummer uses. Now, a drummer has these cymbals. I believe sometimes they're called hi-hats. They're kind of floppy things and they're not quite drums. They're kind of thin things. They look like they're carefully balanced on top of a stick or something and you made a tinny sound. They call that the cymbals. They're not quite drums, they're cymbals. And when I think of simmering, I think of that. It's not really cooking or boiling or burning or anything like that. It's simmering. But what is it? Into your head. Now, I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, I'm surprised he didn't say anything about Shit Creek. And the popular phrase, up Shit Creek without a paddle. Did I not say anything about Shit Creek? I'm surprised at that, because I did. I did mention about artificial creeks in the city, maybe vaguely connected to the sewers. I suppose that would be fitting. You're in Shit Creek, in the middle of a city, and you've no paddle. Well, why would you need a paddle? It's empty. You're on a motorbike with Arnold Schwarzenegger as a robot. Why would you need a paddle? Maybe for balance, I suppose. If you're balancing on the... No, I take that back. You're on that motorbike, evading some pursuer. You're driving along this creek thing. You're going all over the place. If you're riding the back of that motorbike, a paddle may well be helpful for balance. I presume it is. I've never ridden on the back of a motorbike. I've ridden on the front of a moped as the operator thereof. I've never ridden with anyone as a passenger on a moped because I wasn't a fucking lunatic even when I was operating a moped. You don't carry people on the back of a motorbike. That's not a thing. It's not a thing. It's not a passenger thing. Not a passenger thing. It's not a tandem. You're not in some sort of motorcycle rowing canoe club. No, you're not a cycling team. And if you are a motorcycling team, get yourselves a vehicle each. A motorbike is a single person operated vehicle. It's a bit like the city buses. The city buses since the late 1980s have been one person operated vehicles. They got rid of bus conductors completely. The driver does everything, takes the fares and drives everything. And you're on a little motorbike there and you think there should be two people on that. No. Those buses, some of them carry 70, 80, 90 people. And there's just one fella operating the whole thing. Takes the cash, watches the doors, lets people on and off, drives everywhere, shouts at people. He does all that. It's all considered one job. And there's plenty of room to have a second person on board. He could certainly put a second seat up front to have a second person there, but they don't. Because, you know, that's not necessary. Now, on a motorbike, it's not necessary either, but more than that, it's just bad. You don't want a second person on a motorbike. What are they going to do? They're going to just counteract every move you make. You're going to be turning the bike a bit to the left, and if they're not leading the right way, it all falls apart. Is that right? Maybe it isn't. You turn a motorbike to the left, and someone's on the back of it. Do they have to turn to the left too? Do they have to counterbalance you and turn to the right? How does that work? I don't know. And I don't want to know, because that's a one-person operated vehicle. So stop it. Even if the person in the back is doing the driving, that's not a thing either. That's not a thing. You're not one of those trains where when they're going back the opposite way, the driver is at the back. They used to call them push and pull trains. You'd have the engine at one end. Now did you mention it? I think there were push and pull trains where the locomotive part had a cabin at each end. But when you were going back the opposite way, the driver would go to the other cabin that's at the other end of the engine, but it's still on the back of the train. So he'd be watching the back of the train would be in front of him, and he'd be watching that through his window and hoping. It'd be like having a car with a very, 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 very long and high bonnet, so you can't see a fucking thing where you're going. And you want that? Why would you want that on a motorbike? No. If you're riding a motorbike, you don't put someone in front of you as a passenger either. And that's why, because you're not a push and pull train. And push and pull trains were never practical. They never wore. They never wore. Never. Never, ever, ever. They never wore. I still haven't said what the creak was that's in the room that's emanating from this antique chair upon which I'm sitting. But unlike my utterance of the word creak, the creak is being automatically removed before I even get to edit. That's very good. I have a system whereby the creak from the chair is suppressed. I tested it earlier. I don't have to worry about the creak from the chair at all. I just have to worry about when I say creak. This chair has been creaking constantly, so much so that I wouldn't be surprised if I'm about to break it. But it hasn't caused any production issues at all. It's automatically removed before I even listen back to it. It's gone. It's just gone. It's not there at all. And I know it's recording it. I can hear it in my headphones now, but when I listen back, it'll be gone. Just gone. Record everything that comes out of my mouth. Record nothing that comes out of this chair. That's excellent. That would be a problem if people were like the Mr. Men. In this part of the world, there's a series of young children's books and cartoon adaptations called Mr. Men. Each episode is Mr. Happy or Mr. Sad or Mr. Angry or Mrs. Clever or Mrs. Something else. Now, while they may well be very educational, they're portrayed in cartoon form as people with their entire torso is a head. The face is on the front of the torso. It's like something you get on some ancient cave painting where they portray what people assume to be ancient aliens or something. You'll have some fella whose face is on his chest. And the Mr. Men characters are like that. I mentioned that because it occurs to me that if I was built like one of those characters, my mouth could be down, halfway down in my torso here. So it'd be a lot closer to the chair. And the creaking sound is coming from the chair, not far below that part of my torso. So that could be an issue if we were built like that. Happily we're not. Our faces are not in the middle of our torso. My face is in the front of my head, and it's right up at the very top of my body. The farthest top extremity of my body. That's where I talk out of, and that's good. But the creaking sound isn't coming out of me, it's coming out of the chair. I suppose, in a way, the chair is somewhat of a musical instrument being played by that part of my anatomy. I suppose you could say that. Yes, you could say that. It's like a musical instrument. So I know it's not particularly musical, but lots of musical instruments aren't particularly musical unless they're in the hands of someone very talented. Like that Australian thing, the flippy board the Australians have. disgraced musician Rolf Harris used to play it. He had a wobbly board thing, and you wobble it a bit. Apparently, it's very fragile. If you wobble it the wrong way, it breaks. But if you're a proper musician, you can get some sort of music out of it. And most people can't play that. So similarly, most people couldn't get a musical tune out of a creaking chair. I finally got to the creak thing. The creak is coming from the chair. So I think that's all I needed to get to today. I've been trying for some time to get to the creak thing, and I got to the creak thing, and that's done. So that's good. That's good. I think that's the end of the programme. If it hasn't ended yet, it certainly should end now. If it hasn't ended yet, this should surely be the end of it. I would hope so anyway.